Monday through Friday at this time, the Columbia Broadcasting System presents Service Time. Every Tuesday afternoon, this program is devoted to the men who sail the ships of the United States Merchant Marine. In cooperation with the War Shipping Administration, Columbia brings you It's Maritime. It's Maritime, dramatizing the history and color of the American Merchant Marine. This is the story of the sea. This is the story of maritime America. Today you'll hear about the first steamboat to sail across Lake Erie and about a 4F with a Purple Heart. There'll be music with Ensign Philip Lang directing the orchestra of the Maritime Service Training Station of Sheepshead Bay. Yes, it's maritime. An old familiar song is one that we usually associate with some pleasant happenings on some happier day. Just such an old tune, first heard back in 1930, and still showing lots of life today, is Three Little Words. The year 1816 saw the birth of the Canadian merchant fleet with the construction of a ship they call the Frontenac. This vessel was built at a cost of some $50,000. She was the first steamship to sail on the Great Lakes. Not to be outdone, a group of Americans promptly launched their own steamship the following year. They called their vessel the Ontario. In the office of the American Steamship Company, an important meeting was being held.
We Americans and our Canadian neighbors across the border have made a beginning. Now we must go forward and build more and more ships.
We should next build a steamship to sail Lake Erie. Sailing ships require 5 days to cross from Buffalo to Detroit. A steamship could do it in much less time.
I propose that we start construction on such a ship as quickly as possible.
I second that proposal.
The Lake Erie Steamboat Company of Buffalo laid the keel for the first steamship to be built on Lake Erie.
She was 135 feet long and 32 foot beam. A 30 foot smokestack rose beside her two masts, and she had two 15 foot paddle wheels. They named her for a famous Indian chief. She was christened Walk in the Water.
The The steamship Walk in the Water sailed across Lake Erie on her maiden voyage on the 23rd day of August in the year 1818. The wharves of Buffalo were lined with townspeople who had come to watch her departure.
$18 for a cabin or $7 for a series. Dip right up, ladies and gentlemen. Buy your tickets for a trip across Lake Erie, right?
A handsome ship, Mr. Brown, without her smokestack and paddle wheels. You'd think she was one of them new clippers they're building in New England. Yes, she's a handsome ship. How does it feel, Mr. Brown, to be the man who designed such a beauty?
I'll feel much better when this day is over. Ship's maiden voyage is always a time of anxiety for the man who designed her.
But what could go wrong?
Nothing, I hope. Just that I am more familiar with steamboats that sail the calm waters of the Hudson and the Ohio rivers.
Well, what difference does it make whether it's the Hudson River or Lake Erie?
When I designed this ship, I had no table of stresses for Lake Erie. I'm told that gales blow up here as destructive as those in mid-ocean.
Yes, we have some twisters.
And I built the Walk in the Water light. It's designed for fair weather. Pray to God she never runs into a bad storm.
The Walk in the Water was so large, she couldn't enter the shallow harbor of Buffalo. So she stood offshore, tended by a covey of small boats. The new ship was equipped to carry 100 passengers. Forward cabins were for the gentlemen, and those aft were for the ladies. On her maiden voyage, she carried only 29 passengers. Her builder, Noah Brown, stood on the bridge with Captain Job Fish, who was keeping an eye on his turnip watch.
Exactly 1 o'clock, Mr. Brown.
Very well, Captain. Everything in order?
Yes, sir. Everything shipshape.
All right. Let's get underway.
Sound that cannon!
Sound cannon!
Hoist anchor!
Hoist anchor!
We're sailing across Lake Erie!
They headed across the lake, but not in a direct line to Detroit. The Walk in the Water had to stop at every landing for fireworks. She was a thing of wonder to all the wilderness people who gathered on the banks to watch her chug past. She stopped at Dunkirk, Erie, Cleveland, and Sandusky so that the populace could have a look at her. It was toward evening of the second day before the Walk in the Water finally sighted the city of Detroit.
Mr. Brown?
Yes, Captain?
It'll be dark before we reach Detroit. You can just see the city off there on the horizon.
Very well. Drop anchor at Fighting Island. We'll spend the night there and go into Detroit first thing in the morning.
Good. We'll make a better showing in the daylight. Yes, sir. We'll give the people of Detroit something to talk about.
The Walk in the Water dropped anchor at Fighting Island. That night, several prominent Detroit citizens came aboard for the triumphal run to the city. She sailed in the next morning into the brand new harbor which had been especially built for her. According to Captain Fish's turnip watch, the maiden voyage had been completed in 44 hours and 10 minutes. For 3 years, the Walk in the Water sailed back and forth across Lake Erie with an occasional run up to St. Clair and through Lake Huron. On the afternoon of October the 30th, 1821, the steamship set out on a customary run to Buffalo with a full list of passengers. The weather was dirty. The waves came higher and higher as the ship slowly steamed across the lake.
We're making no headway at all against this wind.
Sounds as though the ship's about to fall apart. Her seams are beginning to open.
Well, I never done this before. But perhaps we'd better turn back to Buffalo.
Water's pouring in faster than the pumps can handle it.
All right. Put her about.
Aye, aye, sir.
The Walk in the Water was grounded on a sandbar just 12 miles from Buffalo. Sailors fought their way ashore with a hawser and secured it to a tree. This made a lifeline over which they worked ashore in a small boat. All passengers were saved. The Walk in the Water was a complete wreck, except for her engine. This was a precious piece of machinery in 1821. It was salvaged and placed in another ship, the Superior, which for more than a decade continued to carry cargo and passengers up and down Lake Erie. ¶¶ Here is a song written by one of the merchant seamen who plays in our orchestra, Petty Officer Michael Ozina. The words are sung by Petty Officer Tommy Mercer, and the song is A True Sense of the Word.
Yes, Sergeant.
Medical officer, won't you? This way.
Noto?
Yes, sir?
Noto, I'm sorry, but the Army can't use you.
You mean you're rejecting me?
Yes. On account of your eyes. Your forehead, Noto.
Had gone bad. And yet I'm a commercial artist and spent long hours over my drawing board. I studied commercial art and later worked in an advertising agency. Guess those long hours of work injured my eyes. But I wore glasses and I'd been certain that I'd be able to get into the war. But the Army said I was 4F.
Young Noto went back to his drawing board, but his thoughts were of the war. All his friends were in some branch of the armed forces. Then his kid brother Barney, a year and a half younger, went into the Army. That was when Lorenzo Noto decided that somehow he was going to get into the fight, too.
There's a job in it for me somewhere. Even if I am for it and wear glasses. Maybe they'll take me in the Merchant Marine.
Lorenzo Noto applied to the Merchant Marine and was accepted as a merchant seaman. He was sent to the Maritime Service Training Station at Sheepshead Bay. 4.5 months later, he went to sea for the first time.
Shipped out first aboard a collier and for the next 3 months sailed up and down the Atlantic coast. My second trip took me to North Africa, where I missed seeing my brother by 3 days. He was only 19 years old, but he was a staff sergeant with the 45th Division of the 7th Army. They had just left North Africa for the invasion of France. We came back to the States. After 2 weeks ashore, shipped out again. This time, we went to Plymouth and Southampton. This time, we met the war, face to face.
The ship was a Liberty, the S.M. Shoemaker, carrying a cargo of food, bulldozers, and other vital supplies. She was part of a large convoy that was attacked many times, but the Shoemaker was not hit once. While she was tied up at an English dock, Lorenzo Noto and the other merchant seamen watched the buzz bombs whiz over their heads and crash into the city.
Hey, Noto!
Yeah? What is it?
I just heard that a whole convoy's been struck by buzz bombs crossing the channel.
Well, don't believe everything you hear.
I also heard we're going to take this cargo into Antwerp.
And if you listen very carefully, you can also hear another buzz bomb.
Hey, that one's flying low.
Well, it sure is. They're coming over more frequently now.
Wonder if they're bombing Antwerp.
We'll find out for ourselves, if that's our destination.
It was their destination. As the convoy crossed the channel toward the coast of France, every rail was lined with seamen, peering at the horizon. They could see flashes of fire, and after a bit, they could hear tremendous explosions. Lorenzo Noto's ship was in the first convoy to go into Antwerp. German bombs were still falling in the city. Harbor bustled with activity, but there was no one available to unload the S.M. Shoemaker. 3 days later, the Belgian civilians, under the direction of American army men, began to remove the cargo. And the captain allowed his crew to go ashore.
I had a one-day pass to visit Antwerp. It was a foggy, miserable day. The city was under a constant rain of rocket and buzz bombs. I saw a long line of people waiting to get into the wrecked movie theater, where they were showing an old cowboy picture. I'd seen it back home, but I went inside to get out of the rain. The theater was jammed with people. Sat in the orchestra. As I watched the picture, I could hear the bombs exploding in the city. You listened when one fell. You waited, wondering how close it would come. You breathed easier when it hit a couple of blocks away. You couldn't really enjoy the picture. There was a vacant seat next to me. Soldier came in. I moved over and he sat down. You could sense that the whole audience was jittery. They kept shifting in their seats. I realized that I was perspiring. Palms and my hands were damp. Everybody knew that the Germans had sworn they'd be in Antwerp in 5 days. During all the gunfire on the screen, I could still hear the bombs exploding in the city. It seemed that a bomb had to hit that theater. And suddenly, it was as though the whole ceiling was torn off.
Lorenzo Noto was pinned under the wreckage of the theater. He was buried under wood, stone, and debris, alternately losing consciousness and regaining it.
Couldn't breathe for the dust and smoke. A great concrete beam pinned me down to the floor. My right arm had no feeling in it at all. The soldier in the next seat was dead. If I had not changed seats with him, I would have been the one who was dead. I tried to think of something to keep me alive.
Father was...
Then I heard someone say the Lord's Prayer. All around me, I could hear people screaming and groaning. A Belgian, a boy about 10 years old, was pinned under the beam at my side, crying for help. Dust and concrete kept pouring down our faces like soap flakes. I managed somehow to free my left arm and found my handkerchief. Put it over my face so that I could breathe. I did the same thing for the little Belgian boy. Then I passed out again.
For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory.
When I regained consciousness, I felt separated from my body. I was numb all over, except for terrific pain in my back. As my head cleared, I could hear the voices of people calling for help.
Help!
Screaming
help,
and groaning. Help. The small boy next to me seemed to be unconscious. I called to some of the others.
Hey, hang on. Help will come. Help will come.
Lorenzo Noto lay in the wreckage of the bomb theater for more than 7 hours. When rescuers came, he called to them and directed them in their work. Although badly hurt himself, he helped to save many others. And here is Lorenzo Noto in person to tell the rest of his story. I understand that you worked your way back to this country as an ordinary seaman.
That's right.
But you were just out of the hospital.
Well, there was a shortage of seamen. I felt it was only right that I should come back to the States that way.
And you saw more action even then?
Yes. Another ship moored next to us was struck by a V-2 bomb. It hit the deck. After the hot steel of the deck had cooled off, I helped evacuate some of the men. On my way back to the States, I was talking to one of the other seamen. A soldier standing near us raised his head when he heard my name. He told me that there had been a piece in Stars and Stripes the day before about someone named Noto.
About you?
No, it was about my brother. Barney had been awarded the Purple Heart. His platoon had run out of ammunition. Barney remembered seeing an ammunition dump back along the road. So, with German bullets whistling over his head, he left cover and crawled back to get ammunition. He made 3 such trips in one afternoon. Barney's the hero of my family.
Seems to me the Noto family has 2 heroes. Lorenzo Noto has himself received the Purple Heart. For the injuries he sustained at Antwerp, 1 of 5 merchant seamen ever to be so honored. Victor Herbert was never a merchant seaman, but he was always traveling back and forth across the Atlantic Ocean. Much of his music was written on the shores of Lake Placid. And he even owned a motorboat, which he called the Handy Andy. This afternoon, the orchestra plays Victor Herbert's March of the Toys. Thank you. you know the ropes? Do you know that all former officers and seamen of the Merchant Marine who are now employed ashore are urged to return to their old jobs at sea? Mates, engineers, and ABs are especially needed. If you can qualify and want an important job aboard ship, write or wire collect to Merchant Marine, Washington, D.C. This message is vital. I repeat, all former officers and seamen of the Merchant Marine who are now employed ashore are urged to return to their old jobs at sea. Mates, engineers, and ABs are especially needed. If you can qualify and want an important job aboard ship, write or wire collect to Merchant Marine, Washington, D.C. Return to your old job at sea.
It's Maritime, one of a series of service time programs which is brought to you every day, Monday through Friday. It's Maritime is presented each Tuesday afternoon in cooperation with the War Shipping Administration. The music was played by the orchestra of the United States Maritime Service Training Station of Sheepshead Bay under the direction of Ensign Philip Lang. Join us again next week when it's Maritime. It's Maritime is written by Vincent McConner, narrated by Harry Kramer, and directed by Ronald Dawson. Tomorrow, Service Time, in collaboration with the United States Army, will present Wax on Parade. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.